www.israelsin.com. שלום עליך ועליכם ועליכן ועלינו, ושלום לכל העולם. These opportunities to come to Tel Aviv, which is my favorite city ever in the history of cities, and now I've been able to take it out of the theoretical realm.
How can actually we compare Tel Aviv to Paris?
That's an easy one.
Yeah, exactly.
Paris is much better.
Tel Aviv is what New York would like to be. And Tel Aviv has a great chunk of LA in it. It's got like the best of every possible world. And so, and the beach. Well, you know, you get that with the best. They do come together, but at least the worst you can find so many places, but they'll be able to find some tastes of the best. A taste of the best. Yes, they're poor Detroit there. There's one more person we're expecting, so we shouldn't actually start before they come. But this I can say is, which it's an auspicious time for us to be in this circle, and for allowing us to honor the Torah and the light of the teachers that this circle and this learning honors. And now it's actually real Yahrzeit time. That, of course, I've learned in the 1980s with my brother Yoram, and he just left all his friends, and so we had this opportunity to study Rav Kook, which I studied Rav Kook with him way more than we studied like 60, 70 hours in our lifetime of Rav Kook in various times. So we sat with it a lot. So thank you for allowing me to honor his memory. And next Sunday night is the Yahrzeit Kaf Chet Be'av of the Rav HaNazir, Rabbi David Cohen, and there's a gathering that we go up in Sunday afternoon up to Mount of Olives, to where he's buried right beside Rav Kook, and his son, the Shar Yashuv Cohen, will say Kaddish from a distance because he's a Kohen, so he needs another minion to come to the thing, and he's off there in the Kohen district. And then afterwards we go to the institute that's dedicated to the Nazir's teaching and presentation, and there's an evening dedicated. And so that's this week, and it's now, so I mark it every year, and I'm one of the people they invite because I'm willing to go up to the mountain in the middle of the day on the hottest day of the year. And I'm not a Kohen, and I'm a deep friend of the teaching. And then, 4 days later, 5 days later, the 3rd of Elul, next Thursday night, Friday, is Rav Kook's Yahrzeit. He was born on the 16th of Av Elul. His entire life was Elul based. He arrived in Israel. No, the first time he arrived in Israel was in Iyar, the day that's now in Yerushalayim. But when he came, was it the second time? Yeah, the second time he came back to Israel in 1919, it was in Elul. And it was the day that ends. He came back after being away. But if he had not been in London during the First World War, we wouldn't have had the Balfour Declaration. As soon as the First World War ended, Rav Kook came back on the 3rd of Elul, 1919, and spent the rest of 16 years of his life doing everything he did, that is, that he seeded, and passed away on the 3rd of Elul, 1935. And so there's many things that are, you know, in Jerusalem. And just this evening, we had a conversation before that there might be a possibility that the whiteshabbat.com are going to agree to do an evening of Rav Kook learning at his Yahrzeit, and that I'll be presenting in Tel Aviv on next Thursday night. So please feel free. And it's Rav Kook's Yahrzeit, so, and Tel Aviv was his favorite city, as I've told you a bunch of times, right? Okay. So in marking that this is the moment, and we take in our tradition the fact of a Yahrzeit and honoring the light of anybody's life, and everybody had light that they gave to the world, is considered a blessing for those who send forth the blessing, and so this want to honor the extraordinary lives and teachings that are inside this teaching. We've only touched a little bit of it. It's the more and more and more time I spend with it, the more I'm like amazed at its breadth and depth. And we did a lot. I mean, I'm sorry for too much, if it was too much in terms of that. But it's, and they need to be gone back to. They're like little taste, but it's an extraordinary. He was in for 60 years of his life, even longer. He was in the state of hashra'a, the state of things like Moshe Rabbeinu was always with that mask. In a little way, he was in this state, and he was just writing, and integrating the most complete knowledge of the Torah that anybody's ever mastered since the Vilna Gaon. And so it's this perfect integration of illumination and depth of Torah and breadth of Torah. So lots of people can say far out hippie things and stuff, but when Rav Kook is saying it, that's a whole, then we know we're talking, you know, Torah. So it's a blessing for us. And with your permission, let's, on the back of the sheets we have today, I put two poems at the end, so that you can also look at the poems. And let's begin this evening. It's page 4 of the package I just gave out. Everybody has? They made this. Here's one more. And is that it? Is everybody?
Four or five. I have four.
No, it's five.
This is four.
No, we need five.
We don't have
five. Here's more five. They have another one. Okay. You don't need to share this. Are you got? Who needs a five?
Oh, just kidding. So we have five.
No, but everybody's got a five?
No, we have
five. Everybody's got five. So look at the back of five, page 4. This is, you're going to hear it. It's on the CD. It's written on the CD cover, the English translation. But he wrote this in London. And the scene was World War I, the world falling down. He wasn't physically well, and the doctors told him, go for walks. Apparently had an operation of some sort during that point. He wrote a will, and the operation so turned out okay, but he went for walks, as the doctor said, and he wrote a tremendous amount. So these are poems and things that came out, you know, in walks through Hyde Park and in the environs, so you can follow along. But the pagination didn't quite work, so it's the put a line after the third line, and the one where it's beginning is Shuvaruchi, which is the beginning of the fourth line. Shuva Ruchi. And he's completely about tshuva. That's what is known as the Rota Tshuva, and on every level. That was so. So, Shuva Ruchi, Shuva Le'uzecha. Lama hiyu hashamayim shomemim be'einecha. והם מקור העוז והחיים, וחיים הם נותנים לכל אשר בארץ. Come back, my spirit. Return to your full strength. Why should the skies be desolate in your eyes when they're the source of power and life, and they give life to all on earth? בכל עת אשר יסחה ליבך, עלות אל על, הווה כארי גיבור, ודע ככוח וחיים, לך, לך, ירד. Whenever your heart raises you, whenever any moment as your heart is raised, ascend to the heights. El Al. This is where the airline got it from. He trademarked it. And this Alot El Al. Have ki ari gibor, be like a powerful lion. And know that life and strength and life has descended for you, for each of us. Al tira mimhumat gev midildul basar v'tashut chomer. Don't be afraid of the upheaval of the body from sagging flesh and weakness of matter. Or haneshama yosif lecha lach ometz. The light of your soul will add to you courage. The light of your soul will give you courage. V'ziv chayecha me'od ye'ematz. And then the light of your life will be very strong. Heye chazak ruchi ve'amitz me'od. Uf shchakim ufa b'rayonecha. Hista'er la'merchavim limkor ha'pliot. Be strong, my spirit, very brave. Fly the skies, soar in your thought. Storm the wide places, all the way to the source of wonders. Hitromem el al, veheye sagiv, ubesegiv ta'ale birnanat hitromem. Rise high, become exalted. Rise mightily, rise with a joyful song. Al tifchad ki uscha oz netzach. Don't be afraid, your strength is an eternal power. Chaim gma she'af orim lirvaya. Drink in life, swat like mud, bring in life. She'af orim lirvaya. Inhale light to overflowing. Don't be afraid. Your power is the power of the eternal. Really experience life. Aspire, bring in life to overflowing. Chaim gma she'af orim lirvaya.
May we be so blessed. Any comments about the poem? Okay. So we'll go to the other brain. I want to this time make sure we use our time to allow us to say some, bring things to a pause at least, and hopefully we'll have other opportunities to learn Rav Kook for those who are interested in learning Rav Kook. And we've only tasted, or there's like so much, and I really invite you to go back and spend time with these and use them and take them to Shabbat tables and, just bring the English, whichever pieces that you find of interest and continue to, if you're interested, look at the teachings and share them.
Would you like to comment on the poem?
Would I like to comment? Well, if you, what can you say in this way? I understand. What can you say? He's, you can see the extraordinary ambitious, and illuminated and spirit that was at the core of who the human being was. He was really like, really wanted to, the fullness of the human experience and the the fullness of his connection with God and his neshama pnimi through the ascend to the heights, be like a heroic lioness, fly the skies, soar in your thought. Like, give ourselves permission to really, really become our highest singing self. And he was a singing soul. I mean, there's no way around it. His soul was singing, and he was inviting everybody to sing their soul. And here was a song of his soul. And also, but expressing very much, I want connection, because he also knew what it was like to be disconnected. He experienced that. There are pieces where he talks about the pains and the difficulties and so on. But he was so committed to the connection that his deepest energies and feelings went to, you know, not mourning the separation, but calling out for connection. And becoming, you know, and really taking a thing. So he had it. He had, people said, you know, he reached certain whatever. I don't know. Each of us is our own judge to think, to say what it is. But what I would like to, I'd like to start with at least let's go around. And I ask people to think of, if you have only one question, and I have a few questions, but if now, even at this moment, just one question, if Rav Kook were, if you could, you know, send it to the, it's not like sending to the North Pole, but if you could have a question for Rav Kook, what would it be in the here and now? And just look around and say our hellos. Yeah, it's fine. No. There's no way. There's no way. It's like it's
vacant,
not. And everybody knows your name?
I'm Karen. And I'm still vacant. I'm interested to hear what I can see, but I can't connect it.
Yeah, I guess I've like stepped over a certain edge with Rav Kook. So it's helpful for me to good. We'll continue, but I don't want to, please. And everybody knows everybody's name?
He's Michael.
Okay.
He's Steve, but I don't remember your name.
I'm Bethany.
Michael. I have a lot of questions for the Rav. Echoing the kinds of how questions. But also, I was curious of like all of his writings with kind of like the talk between like specifics, like what he terms particulars and generalities, and like finding out the staying rooted to the Torah, but also like spending time with yourself and building what he calls like your own spiritual ethos.
Yeah.
I was curious, what do you think of Judaism today, in terms of all the, like in Israel and outside Israel, all the way different people like practice and kind of connect to Judaism? Because it kind of sounds like the songs, like the different levels of songs that he talks about, but at the same time, it's kind of, you know, like he says, like, yeah, stick to like the Torah and the idea of the Torah, but he says, like, in Torah, there's like different interpretations of things, and in some places there's also, like, I think it's when talking, like, I guess the talk about, like, the Messiah coming, it's like, everyone does Shabbat the same way or something. You know, and I'm curious, like, what Rav Kook would say with all those differences that exist in the Jewish people today. What his answer would be. What do you think of all the differences?
Can I just make one comment on this? Not quite in touch with the people around him. His expressions are about his own experiences on a plane that almost that he's not able to convey it in a way that people, average men around him, can gain strength, even the intelligent men around him, can gain strength from his own insights.
Thank you. No. Okay.
for me, I think it keeps going back to tshuva and repentance. For someone who writes so, for someone who writes so with so much light and so much positivity and so much hope for those around him and for himself, where does the tshuva come from? And is it within himself? Is it with actions that he sees other people doing and he's saying tshuva for them? And to who is he doing tshuva? To whom is it? What, and it goes back to, I think, what Michael's saying, a little bit of what Steve is saying is, who is God to Rob Cook?
He says you can't define it, but you would.
Right, and then that's, I think that's what the question comes from, is he does, he continuously talks about not being able to define it, but then where does the tshuva come from? Where, who is he doing it to?
I don't know whether I should respond to some of them right away or not, because but maybe not. Maybe let's hear everything, everyone, please. But but there's a strong practice in Elul to read Orot HaTshuva, and as you really, you'll get a tremendous, much more than I could even explain in an hour. And he even himself, Orot HaTshuva is the Lights of Penitence. It's like 17 chapters, and he used to, the recommendation is read a half a chapter a day, every day in Elul. And it's a perfect preparation for if you're into, you know, everyone has to be interested in Torah Torayah, but, and the, his writings on tshuva, Erev Tov, this side, Bakasha. Makirim, no makirim?
Ezra.
Erev Tov, Ezra. Bakasha. Yes, you're the pimple? But you, so we're doing English, but I just figured speak.
English is our.
Okay. It looks so. Anyways, I thought. So, hold on. Session 5. There's one. Do we have. Do we have any more? Everybody has. No, but wait a minute. Oh, here's one more. And then everybody has. Okay. So we're going around and asking everybody what is their one question to Rav Cook. That we'll try, and we're not going to be able to answer them all, but we were just talking about the question of tshuva, and I was saying, for a really good way to learn Rav Cook and use it for Pesach, for Rosh Hashanah preparation, is to read half a chapter a day, and it only takes 5 minutes of Orot HaTshuva, which in this book the entire thing is translated, and the way it's set up is the first 3 chapters are just as they're written. He wrote those in one flash, and then he didn't have time to write anymore. His son, in Rav Cook's lifetime, with Rav Cook's guidance, went through the diaries that he wrote, and he put together another 14 chapters on themes to do from Rav Cook in an extraordinary order. It's to read it every day. It gives us lots for somebody wants to consider tshuva and what tshuva is all about and what the energy of tshuva is and what its potential is and why for him it's all of that.
But the questions that are being asked here is
not
so much about tshuva, is how does one connect to that? How does one experience that? How does one get
right
to that place?
For sure. So what I'm going to say is he actually speaks to a lot about here. I would say when you read that, you'll get some more than I could share right now about to do that. Because I was thinking, if you think of, I'm going to try. I have to think about it. Let me think. I'm going to share. Yeah, there's something for sure. For sure. But I'm saying that's his most down-to-earth book, where he really talks about the process of working with yourself and working through yourself.
Is that different than
Orota Kodesh? Orota Kodesh, no, a lot of this is drawn from the same notebooks. Uh-huh. It's just the emphasis and the perspective. So, yeah. Okay, for who is God to Rav Cook? That's a good one. Please.
So, I sent you my question last week, but it's been
been deepened as a result of this last Shabbat. So do you mind if I tell a brief story before I answer
your
question? So my question has to do with like how Rav Kook would respond to like issues of nationalism today. And over Shabbat I went to a settlement for Shabbat.
Uh-huh.
And in the middle of the night, there was alarm in the community because there were some people who hopped the fence from the community next to them and broke into someone's house who was on vacation and stole some of their weapons and ammunition. So at 2:30 in the morning, we got woken up because the person we were staying with, he's on the volunteer response team. So he like ran into our room and grabbed his M16 and ran out. And I was like, what the hell is happening?
Wow.
Like, where am I? I was completely freaked out.
Yeah.
And like just hours before that, we were talking about how he's on this volunteer team because he was explaining while he leaves his cell phone on. And he was like, but nothing's ever happened. So like, it's not a big deal. And then like 3 hours later, we're getting woken up. Then the next day at Kiddush at his house, there were like 3 people who came over and all of them had M16s on them and like pistols on their hips. And it was just, I was completely overwhelmed and just felt like there's just so much masculine. I think you said something about there being like masculine responses and masculine energy around how we're dealing with like the situation. And I just felt like there was so much of that energy. And so I started asking some of the people questions like, why do you feel the need to carry on both guns with you at all times if things don't usually happen? And they were explaining, and I just feel like I wish Rav Kook was here to provide some leadership on the situation to be able to help with, because the reason why I say this is because I think I don't judge the fact that they feel the need to protect themselves, because there have obviously been situations that have happened where they need to. But at the same time, there's so much polarization and demonization that happens as a result, and both groups of people become one kind of person to both groups. And I just wonder like what it would be like if he was here to help us work through that thought process. So my question was really, what advice would he give us today to help us work through the situation, work through the conflict with the Arabs, to be able to have some sort of positive endpoint that could come out of the polarization that we now find ourselves in. And my second question was just like, how would he help us work through the challenge of getting the Haredim to be in the army? Because I think there's also a lot of demonization happening on mm-hmm. that side also.
I mean, whatever he did with love. That's all I can say at this very moment. But the challenge is how to. The question is, how can anybody really know? But I can give you things of where he discusses things around that, and we can see if that speaks to that. But it's an ongoing search. But those are great. Those are the questions we need, and that's really what we need guidance with, isn't it? Really, that whole, I mean, in the biblical thing, it's Yitzchak and Ishmael, in Rav Kook's terms, and he deals with that, and something I'll share with, I think I must have shared, but okay, thank you.
So something that I was thinking about was somewhat connected to what Leah said, but different, like, just like more big, like how he relates to the other, and in the source sheet that you created for the Universal Love, I took the translation from that book, and this kind of was like a resonating answer that I thought I would share as if he answered my question.
Oh, so please, why don't you share it?
Okay, the love for people must be alive in the heart and soul, a love for all people and a love for all nations, expressing itself in a desire for their spiritual and material advancement. Hatred may direct itself only toward the evil and the filth in the world. And so, you know, that resonated with me in terms of like how to like compartmentalize, but then, you know, hearing everybody share, I'm like, okay, so that's like a very beautiful, eloquent end point, but like what's the path? Kind of similar to what we're all sharing in terms of spiritual connection. This is like the other connection. And then also in thinking of what everybody was sharing and kind of reflecting on what I thought about the other, I was just thinking about like the other within like the Jewish community of people who. So for this poem that we read, it has a lot of like really beautiful quote unquote Jewish religious language without being, I think, too overt and being God holy talk. But I still think
it also would be for any human being on the planet.
So that's what I thought initially. I read that and that's what I thought, like, wow, this is really beautiful, this could speak to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I also think that like I don't know, I think that it could still be challenging for someone who really struggles with talking about God. And so I guess I would ask him, you know, you want spiritual advancement, and I would imagine he would be open to people finding that in their own way, but like, what if people like are uncomfortable with like even this beautiful language that is connecting to and dancing around talk of God when that is like a barrier for someone?
Is it a beautiful language as a barrier? Or the connection?
In the talking about God and about holiness.
Yeah.
Like, for me, as someone who, like, I know that I believe in a higher power, but I struggle with, like, things, like,
mm-hmm.
I feel open to that. So I can, like, deal with that grappling and be like, wow, he's saying this really intense thing. I don't know how I feel about it. But, like, what about my friend who's like, yeah, I'm Jewish, but, you know, eh. So two kind of different questions.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with Judaism, or his mortality, his realization of his mortality,
or for sure, and it's also about his desire to really awake, to self-awaken to his maximal potential.
My sardonic self, he's placating himself because he knows the end is near. So
well, this
better
was
know, you know, in his wonderful place rather than just wonder what next.
Well, this was written by Moshe Pardes in 1918, 1919, so he had one thing, but it wasn't that. He went back then and went through the most productive period of his life. He was about to step in to become the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, and then Israel. And so all that happened after that. This was, so he was really like. Right, in terms of contextualizing this, that was the context. Cool.
Yeah, so it isn't necessarily about Judaism, but that's my point.
No, it's a poem. It's about his soul process. It's about his soul process and his. But it's also it's an example for us in that sense that we can have this direct conversation with our own inner being and all that. In that sense, he's modeling that this is a form of prayer. That the prayer that got locked into the form of, you know, mincha maror, this and that, and that's it. It's like coming. Israel is all about, you know, direct communication, and many of it was this. Sure.
So I'm most interested in your statement about how would you deal with Medinat Israel, which is his term, and his enemies. To me, that's a great
question. All right.
That makes sense to me. I can relate to that.
Sure. All right.
There is one little piece here that kind of addresses some of the issues. It's very short. Because you talk about inner and outer experience. He says the inner enlightenment that wells up forcefully within the person, and the enlightenment from without, that's the rational that derives from the knowledge of the world and of reality, both contribute to building the human spirit, kind of a paradox. They perfect one's understanding and will, and they function jointly, even when a person is not conscious of it. But the more the person puts his heart to contemplating the spiritual edifices that these two basic paths fashion within him, the more he perfects them, and he rises increasingly in a clear spiritual ascent. He's then filled with new strength and courage, which flow from the divine fountain of the living. So he's saying that there are two ways of saying it. And I find that interesting because there's a paradox. one from within where you don't really know where it actually comes from, and the out, the without, which I thought was beautiful because he defines it as that rational, that rational part of us, and the, but most important, the experiences that we take in every moment. Those two things combined bring you to another place, another level. And in that outside, which directly responds to that question you made, a point you made, because we all experience, you know, that angst, that fear of death, that fear of the uncertain, you know, this uncertainty of life. And the question is, how do we deal with it in our own personal lives? And I thought your point was really important. I'm going to live a normal life. What steps do I take to get to that place? And fortunately or unfortunately, I think we all have to find it in one sense for ourselves. But it is a certain amount of discipline in our lives that we have to do in order to want to get to that place, in order to want to experience the moment-to-moment beauty.
Firstly, picking up your point, this is nothing to do with Rapu. When I was a young boy, I lived here in Israel. That's post-independence. Okay, so I was here at the birth of the nation. I'm that old, by the way. Every house across the whole of Israel, everyone had a gun. So now, you'd only experience that in the settlements. If you go into any home in Tel Aviv now, it's highly unlikely you open the door and there's a gun. So that's the kind of atmosphere I grew up in. So I'm surprised at your reaction, but I'm not surprised. Okay, Rav Kook. I find it very difficult, and I think it's been reflected in a lot of comments here, of how to connect this person who certainly has a thinking level that is way beyond most of our comprehensions. He thinks at a different level completely. And so I find it difficult to hook into him. And I don't know, at the moment it's sort of washed over me. I haven't been able to say hook into him and say, aha. I mean, I think he's a dreamer. I think he's not of this world. He doesn't appreciate what happens in the street. But he is thinking of what we should be thinking about in order to achieve the things that we are not experiencing now on the street, you know, with a higher level of living, a higher level of understanding. But I don't think he was connected to the common man. His thinking was always higher. It wasn't of the body, it was only of the mind. End of story.
I have a question. In order to get to that place that we're talking about, that we're struggling to find out how he got there, or how he's expressed it.
Let's finish off and then we'll hear a little bit from Rav Kook.
It sounds like there's been a lot of good questions have been asked. And unfortunately, we don't have enough information to ask a question.
Yeah.
But I'm very curious to hear some of the answers. The first thing that I thought about when you had mentioned that you were in the yeshuv in the middle of the incident, I thought like there's no difference between today and 1923 or 1948, other than the date. You know, that's what everybody experienced living in Tel Aviv, in Kiryat Shmona, and I don't know, every city that exists today in Israel was born the exact same way. And they had to defend themselves. There's nothing unique about that, about whatever settlement you were in, except for the date.
I think it's unique. It's that.
So it's pretty intense. It's just intense. It was intense then. It's intense now. And you know the bullets are real.
And also
now, and you, Ezra.
Yeah, I don't know enough to ask the question just yet.
And your name?
Julie.
Julie. Hi. With everybody's permission, I want to start reading specifically, and to relate to that. I wondered, you know, because the question that came to me before was that question about how to bring things down. and the challenge of that. And it's an interesting challenge. And one thing I thought was, there's an essay that people have in the English, but not everybody has the English with them. But those of you that do, you could look on with each other. And I want to share parts of an essay. It's not in this version. This is the smaller one. And I might be able to, if I find it in my book, which I should be able to, then it'll start. Then I'll look at, I'll share what I can find to these in other parts here, and some which you may have in front of you, and some which you may not. But okay. But the piece is, it's in an essay, and in the essays he tends to address things in a more, I suppose you would say, in a more grounded way. The notebooks were his flights of soul, but they were also, his flights of soul were also about very specific things. He was a, an everything thinker. But this is about the relationship with God, and also how to connect spiritually while living physically, which hopefully will lead on that. Okay? It's a thirst for the living God. If you look, if you turn the pages, you'll see it X number of pages in. The heading is...
It's there's a page 19 lightly faded at the bottom.
Yeah.
Like that.
It's in the fat one. Okay, you can look on with me.
And what's the book that you're reading from?
Yeah, it's Abraham Isaac Cook. It's Paulus Press. It's a collection of a translation of his writings.
Is it a must read?
If your language is English, yeah.
Yes.
Forgetting Rav Cook. There's two together. These together are beautiful. They're both by the same person. He was an American rabbi, and it was really, and this was Abraham Isaac
essential
Cook.
Essential writings, okay.
And the second one is Essential Writings.
Okay. And can I ask you a question? If you're already dressed in the classes, then skip it and maybe later afterwards. I don't want to delay you, but
sure.
Why should I read Rav Cook? What is, and again, kick it over to after class.
I can do the short version.
Okay.
The short version is that if one is interested in the broadest, deepest, most modern and future visionary and holistic presentation of Torah and an expansion of the Torah, in his writing represents that. He represents the most advanced human writing that we've had in this history of Torah. So he's for now, he's the Rebbe for now in that sense. And we've had in our history four or five sages that have moved history along, and he's the newest one in that shalsheret. So it behooves us if we want to be in the present and the future rather than stuck in the old Torah, which is the Torah of the old Yeshuv, and he represents the Torah of fusion with Eretz Yisrael and modern times. Okay, so thank you so much. So let's look at this one and see.
Squeeze in a question.
And stuff. But it's from an essay, in his essays, and this was also published in his lifetime. This came in Orot, which is another wonderful thing to read. And we'll skip, but we'll see. The spirit cannot find its stability except in a life oriented towards God. Towards God. Knowledge, feeling, imagination, the will, in the inner and inner outer manifestation, all condition people to center their lives in God. We have this built-in DNA, Adonai. Then we will be able to find their fulfillment, an equitable and satisfying state. If a person should seek for themselves less than this exalted state, they will at once become like a ship tossed about at sea. Stormy waves operating in opposite directions will continually rob us of peace. We will be thrown from wave to wave and will be unable to find ourselves. And if we should be able to immerse ourselves in some, it sounds worse in English than in Hebrew, I think, crude and vulgar preoccupation, You may succeed for a time. We may, in reducing the perspective of our life, and it will seem that we finally found peace. But it's not going to take long, and the spirit will break out of its imprisonment, and the maddening agitation will begin to act in all its fury. The place where we may find peace is only in God. However, God transcends the existing world, making it impossible for us to grasp any aspect of God.
What word is this for God?
Oh, I don't have the Hebrew in front of me. It's all right. But it would be the Dalet Hashem. It could be Elohim. No, it would have to be the Dalet. Probably in there it's Yud Kei Vav Kei. Dalet is probably what is in the Orot. The place where we find peace is God. God transcends the existing world, making it impossible for us to grasp any aspect in feeling or thought. This makes him, as far as we're concerned, non-existent. The spirit cannot find contentment in what does not exist. So this in some way is in response to, you know, what is God for Rav Kook, or the approach to God, at least at this point. It is for this reason wise men who devote themselves to the quest for God are for the most part really weary, spiritually weary. When the soul aspires to the light which shines in the quality of justice and the best of good deeds, or in the measure of truth in the most precise body of knowledge, or in the attribute of beauty in the most exalted of visions. Sort of like how we see Rav Kook seeing things, right? It then, when we're at that level, we see the world is trivialized. The soul has become so ascendant that the entire world, its material as well as its spiritual manifestations, appear to it as an imprisonment, gripping us in its choking atmosphere. Such people seek what is beyond their reach, what in their condition does not appear to exist, and to change the non-existent to an existent is even beyond the will to entertain. It is for this reason that there's often a weakening of the will, as of the other life forces among people whose spiritual inner disposition is directed towards a quest for God. All right, that was a sort of a long paragraph, and normally I would skip it, but I really want to get the context, because I think this next paragraph is part of my response to where I think of where he speaks about direction for what there is for us to do, or at least in a general but a directed way. So just focusing in on God is like tiring. It's like tiring, and it doesn't, you know, and you see like tired prayers. And you see tired...
Can you say something about the last, I'm struggling with the last sentence.
Please, which one?
It is for this reason that there is often a weakening of the will as well as the other life forces among people whose inner disposition is directed toward the quest of God.
Yeah.
Weakening of the will and other life forces.
Yeah, well, the example is, where do we have a Judaism that says the entire Jewish experience is about focusing in on God and nothing else, and everything physical is trivialized, is we see the whole part of Jerusalem that lives in that context. And we see that it's like weak. It's walking around tired, and there's not much energy there, and people aren't having a good time. And they're just, you know, lots of beautiful people, but walking around like, oh, it's hard to be a Jew. And I got to give it this. You know, like that sort of... I think that's part of what is being described here. You just lose.
They're seeking what is beyond their reach.
In many ways. Yeah, but just like, oh, God. And because, you know, and if they're just like praying all day, or only learning one thing all day and putting your whole head into one thing all day and all that, it's like, oh, it's towards about nothing else, and the body doesn't count, and it doesn't matter if I'm wearing it, it's 700 degrees in this juice, in this polyester thing, while it's, you know, 120 degrees outside, but that's the way we dress. So all of that, it's not, there's no vitality. And I don't want to use that as the only one, but he was speaking to that in terms of who are the Jewish people, that was their whole focus, it's just God. That whole part of our thing. Welcome, Kvodo. Hi.
Thank you.
Your name is?
Stuart Weinblatt.
Stuart, have you been here before?
No, but this is my son, and I wanted to just be able to study with him.
Oh, I'm so glad you guys came in. Welcome. It's good. This is our actually last class, and so it's perfect that you're here.
Flying out tonight.
Perfect. So I'm glad. I take this with you and fly with it and read it on the plane. Okay. But let's continue. Now's the paragraph. So that's the problem. it is necessary to show how we can enter the palace by the way of the gate, is the answer. What is the gate? The gate is the divine dimension disclosed in this world, in all its phenomena of beauty and grandeur, as manifested in every living thing, in every insect, in every blooming plant and flower, in every nation and state, in the sea with its turbulent waves, in the panorama of the skies. Tel Aviv is his favorite city. In the talents of all creatures, in the thoughts of writers, the imagination of poets, the ideas of thinkers, in the feelings of every sensitive spirit, in the heroic deeds of every person of valor. That is the gate that, so he's speaking about experiencing the physical, every single aspect of the physical, and especially the idealistic and all that. These are our entries into the divine dimension. It's about experiencing the divine dimension in our physicality, rather than by, you know, I can just go inside and go just internally. I mean, meditation and all that is helpful, but that's pretty good, no? That gives us at least some direction. As you go, yeah, I'm glad. Thank you. Well, you know, well, I try to, you know, this is it's stuff. But brother, that's no, rough cookie. The stars, it's a rough cook one. But now I, okay.
He speaks of the connection to the they, but he does he actually practice it?
Right.
He speaks here, this channel, what we just heard, about the physicality of life, about the street. I was talking about the street level.
Yeah, really.
He actually is speaking here about living at the street level.
Yeah.
He himself, I think, has been and gone and is now on a different flight.
However, his day job was such that he was spending, especially when he was in Jerusalem, an awful lot of time dealing with forms and the British bureaucracy and issues and judgments and fundraising and life all day long. The amount of letters he wrote, we have his letters. His letters are really fascinating reading. There's been some, not much is in English, but they're fascinating. He has a good section here in the letters. It's good stuff. So he did a lot. He did more, you know, in terms of what he did in the practical world is a gazillion times more than I'll ever do in five lifetimes. Because he also, another thing he did from 1919 to 1935 was write in a Talmud the Maimonides Psak and the Shulchan Aruch Psak connected to every issue in the Talmud. And that's a new project that he started. Before that, things weren't so clear. And he put it, and he devoted from 1919-21 till 1935, that's what he did most of his time. We have less of his spiritual writings then, because he wanted to make sure that we see the sweep of the generations, and it's very clear to us. And so,
if it's permissible to you come and ask a question, I would not have thought that, because Hamasad HaRav focuses so much on Tanakh.
But they also have, look at their Halacha Brura project.
Okay.
That's what it's all focused in. And the person who's, hopefully, we lost the election. I'm so sad. Rabbi Stav did not make it. But, I mean, I'm 10 years of mourning. But we're hoping that the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, Ashkenazi, will be Rabbi Stern, who is the head of this project to bring Rav Kook's Talmudic integration into the world and bring it to Yeshivot. And he comes and learns at Beit HaRav Kook every Friday morning. So it's a special...
This little piece that you read right here sounds very much like Judaism to me.
Well, of course.
Right? I mean, this to me is the essence of Judaism. It's live in the world, taste the world, be part of the world, To me, I find Judaism to have a series of rituals and laws that force us to have a balance. So he's basically saying, yes, live a life of spirituality and seek spirituality and speak God, but don't lose yourself only there. Right? And that's kind of where he's saying, you know, this, we live in a world that exists, so live in it. What's the midrash?
I'm looking at how that goes on, because we should actually give him... I'd lost the page when I was looking for it, but let's read one more paragraph. He takes it into a intense spiritual thing, but it might be helpful for us, because he talks about how to awaken spiritually.
Yes,
and it's a couple of paragraphs later on the same page. But unfortunately, so here we are. We'll skip, but the highest domain of divinity towards which we aspire to be absorbed in, here we go. This is important, actually. I'm glad I didn't skip it. So we need to understand this. The highest domain of divinity towards which we aspire to be absorbed in it, to be included in its radiance, but which eludes all our longing, descends for us into the world. And we encounter it and delight in its love and find peace in its tranquility. Right? That's he's saying, don't think that it's all about just like reaching the God, the highest God beyond all physicality, because where that God is, it's right here. It's right here. It's come down for us. And it's for us to encounter and delight in its love. It's not about just to worship and suffer. It's like Mesilat Yesharim. Everybody know that book, Path of the Righteous, by the Ramchal? The Ramchal is the number one Rebbe for all these guys, by the way, if that name means anybody, people here, right? Moshe Chaim Lutzato. Rav Cook was his...
It's a good book. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in English.
Yes, all his writings are great books in English now. And he says at the beginning, the reason for life is litaneg al Hashem, to have oneg in the divine presence. V'lahanot mizif shechinato. That's why we were brought here. Not to be like obedient, you know, loyal servants of, you know, just humble and not our greatest power. We're here lehitaneg al Hashem velehanot miziv shchinato. That's the principle of the Ramchal, and it's quoted by everybody since then. And here he's saying, that's what he's saying. We are have to understand God is right, has descended for us, and we can encounter and we can delight in its love. I'm sure the word that must have been litaneg, and find peace in its tranquility. At times we're privileged with a flash emanating from the highest radiance, for that higher light which transcends all thought. Heavens open up for us and we see a vision of God. But we know that this is only a temporary state. The flash will pass, descend to dwell once again, not inside the palace, but only in the courts. Nebuch. So here he takes it one step further. When the longing for the light reaches its highest point, and that's the internal part, it begins to draw a great profusion of light from the hidden radiance in our own soul, through which is revealed the great truth. That all the worlds, with all that is in them, only appear to us as particular effulgences, but they are in truth manifestations of the higher light, and seen in their essence they make up one whole, a unitary manifestation which has included all beauty, all light, all truth, and all good. Well, we want. What he's saying is, if one wants to bring forth their soul light to the way he is, he's saying we have to, the longing for the light, because we know we're not there. Certainly, so he's taking one step further. The gate is the divine dimension. The gate is the physicality. But there's one step further, and that's to really have the internal experience as well. And without the right, and so this one is about
the heart, horse before the cart. Now I'm putting the cart before the horse. I thought it meant that if the desire is there,
the desire's there, then you light up. Not if you are light, then it opens up.
Well, it seems to be what...
He's saying right now, if you long enough for it,
yes,
there will be enlightenment.
Yes, I think that's... In this way, in the human model of Pi Kabbalah, that Rav Kook really expands, Ratzon, will, is the highest level. It's connected with Keter, and it's the motivator of everything. But if you look, and you have this in the English, well, we can skip to it if you keep our finger where we are, but the one under the moral principles, which you have the entire moral principles, I think, in the photocopy, yeah, but you can just read it. The will... It's necessary that our will be developed to its full potency. Will is the word ratzon. We are here on the aretz to ratz, to put our ratzon on the aretz. The linguistically, it's all there. The aretz is a place for ratzon. And he says it's necessary that our will be developed to its fullest potency. Then it's conditioned towards holiness. Let's skip to...
It's on page 17.
In that one, thank you. Let's skip to paragraph 4. How high a human can rise. A human, we can make our will an active and dominant force in the world, radiating blessing on anyone we choose and influencing life according to our aspirations. And we be a blessing, as Abraham is told, you will be a channel of blessing. One must note clearly this concept of the nature of human in the world, of our controlling influence on existence. From this life lofty height, we descend into the practical world and exert practical domination in external matters, putting nature under our sway. Not in a negative way, of course, but this is only the outer robe of the inner control, of being a blessing, of blessings being bestowed through us according to our will and speech. You shall decree, and it shall be established for you. A light will shine on you always. That's Job. So we're meant here, though, to be tremendous actors of and understand our potency. So, and that's where we meet God. That's where we experience our own God. Is in our own godly power and our experience of the power of good. I mean, all of this is manifested. It works if our ratzon is for tov. And that's what Judaism is all about, defining tov in every possible situation. But the core of it is ratzon latov.
It's a very mystical approach.
He's a mystic. He was a complete mystic. He was, But it also says... Just to realize down here that we're potent, and then it's very much also saying that one level is to experience God in the physical world, but we also have to do our own spiritual inside work and opening if we really want to have the full experience. And then he goes on.
So is this the precursor to God gave this land to me?
How do you mean to me?
In that if we desire this land, then God will see our desire. If we work through that spiritually, it'll be given back to us.
That's also true, but we have to bring it into everything into the world of action. It's not.
Of
it begins there, but then the ratzon becomes a. Gives us direction for our action.
Direction,
and so it can't just be, it's not just internal, it's obviously...
It's not just for the here and now. It's spiritual, our ratzon, it's both.
Both. But it has to be brought... Rav Kook was very... In that sense, it's ironic, because we focused in on Rav Kook's largest thinking. But in terms of his life history, he was very practical.
So what is sort of the definition of will, because to my...
See, that was for me, that's for me part of my, what I liked about Rav Kook is that he actually encouraged the inner process and the inner truth and one's on that, and not it's the type of the type of he really honored the person's will and understood that in our highest aspirations that's God speaking to us.
And so if the will comes from the highest aspiration, so you have to be clear that your will is not coming from a lower aspiration.
That's our work.
And you experience it as such.
That's our work. That's our
work. Is the search for the proper will?
Well, our search is to express that, is to discover what our highest. Here he has in the. Okay, let's read. I wanted where's in this one? I wanted to draw your attention to which one. I'm trying to think of which one will answer. How many people have in this one, in the shorter one, withdrawal and the revelation of the soul? Can you see where it is in there?
It's directing the will.
Right here. Exactly. Yeah. So it's not just like anything.
No.
But focus. Yeah.
So how do we get, how is it directed?
That's a really
happen?
Good question.
The mitzvot.
Pardon?
That's the mitzvot.
That's excellent. That's actually, for us, that's the bottom line. The mitzvot. All right. It sounds kind of trivial, but in reality, it's very
I want to offer another. Okay, I'm going to offer. Sorry.
It's a start. It's part of the foundation. I know you do. It's part of the foundation.
It's trust me.
It's that's kind of the.
I'm just trying to think of that. Like, that's a great answer.
I know, but what I'm actually looking for is the summons to a higher concentration.
Because when you do it, you do the action. I mean, we all do it. I mean, no matter what it may be.
It's on the very
really,
first page?
Not only do you give, you do it.
Ah, oh, there it is. In 207. Of course.
You pay attention. It's expansion. It's
207 and 208.
Good, right? You just keep. And he talks about it.
Into two, Ben Adam. Okay, because this is a little bit ad hoc. But find the one, a summons to higher contemplation in the thinner. In the thinner collection. In this collection. Let's see if I have
it.
207. In here. But I need it because I don't
okay,
have.
Okay, good. You take. We'll
my
listen.
207, yeah, in this case. But I also see this one as a some sort of guidance for what one needs to do in order to grow spiritually and within the dimension of physicality. And then I want to share with you something from the Rav HaNazir, where he gives also quite specific instruction about spiritual growth. But this one begins in the Hebrew, and I have the Hebrew, and so I can also. But it's exactly that. Im tirtse. You see there, a summons to our conversion? If you will it, it begins with. Im tirtse. Here's. Guides. Observe the light of the divine dimension, the divine presence that pervades all existence. Observe the harmony of the heavenly realm, how it pervades every aspect of life, the spiritual and the material, which are before our eyes of flesh and spirit. He says that when you walk around, really recognize what you're seeing is divine dimension, divine in flesh and spirit. So, see it, open our eyes. The tzaddik, as Rav Kook was about in terms of that, was able to draw the light of the future into the present. That's one of the metaphors that they use about, and that he speaks about, that the light of the present, the light of the future is in the present. And we're, if we open ourselves to our with that capacity, we can sense it and we can live in its presence and thus bring it forth. So see where we're right. Exactly. Well, here he's saying, look, see where we are. We're living in this extraordinary harmonious fusion of flesh and spirit, of matter and thing. Contemplate the wonders of creation. Hitbonen, du bina, in the wonder by Plie HaYetzira. It's also a recommendation to read Sefer Yetzira. If somebody wants to learn But Arya Kaplan has a wonderful translation of it in commentary. I really recommend it as a good book to read before one leaves the earth. It's recommended. The Kabbalist, no Kabbalist of any note would leave the earth without having read it. It's not this more interesting now. Okay, contemplate the wonders of creation, the divine dimension of their being, not as a dim configuration that is presented to you from the distance, but as the reality in which we live in. Right? The wonders of creation. This is, we're really living in this constant unfolding, right? This is okay. Know yourself and your world. Know the meditation of your heart. Really, it's like we've had stories, though. You really have to get to know who we are, and we have to be who we truly are, and not what other people want us to be.
How do we address that? So why don't you talk a little bit
about that? Well, he says that by...
Really, because that's kind of the questions that were being asked in the very beginning, and you really kind of, you know, okay, we got it. I got my own way of doing it.
Well, there's so many ways of doing it. It's a, he says he has another piece here, which I'm not going to find these things, but he says Derech Me Yehuda. Maybe I will find it. But he says each person has their unique path, and it's really about finding your unique path and honoring that you're. Even if it's like you think it's crazy and you think like nobody else is like this, that's actually where it is. And honor that part of yourself and understand that each of us has Derech Miyuchada. And
We read that the first one,
right? Yeah, that's why I brought that. And then in the other one he says you have to be alone frequently, elevate your imagination, open your mind so that your soul will reveal itself to you. There's no substitution to really spending time with one's inner being, if one wants to get to know who's our inner being, but to understand that it's a rich journey, and that's where God is. God is not God is in the synagogue. However, is in the synagogue, but that's much less of interest than the experience and communication with God that we're having each of us at every moment. And every experience is like Yud Kei Vav Hei Elokim unfolding in this particular manifestation. And sometimes we get great experiences here, right? You bump into somebody just what you needed to know, and you see somehow the world is with you.
He was sitting on a park bench today.
That's stuff.
It's incredible trees, and all these people moving back and forth.
Yeah.
The beauty.
And then he goes on. Know yourself, your world, your meditations of your own heart, and of every thinker. We really have to, you know, really see what other people think and know what they think. Find the source of your own life and of life beyond you, around you, the glorious splendor of life in which you have your being. It's like recognize that we're walking in Kedusha. Like we've talked about the five principles. I'm going to try to finish with that of the thing. No, that's fine. But just for the sake of the Nazir, but he said that, like there's five principles we have to walk around with, that are the five foundational principles of Rav Kook. We went through this in the prior weeks. The first one is Hakodesh Haklali. Every single thing is kadosh. We're living in the midst of kedusha. Kedusha is not just the synagogue three times a day. Kedusha is the very fabric of life. And then everything is alive. Everything is in a moving process. And everything is one. And the fourth one, everything's good. That whole dynamic that we're living in is actually the dynamic of good. And so we can relax, we can enjoy. We don't have to be afraid. It's like good unfolding. And that's Kabbalah is explicit about that. That's part of what Kabbalah is very important to understand. Then he says, but how do we express good? And then he takes on. So what is our work? And now he gets to the love that is astir in us. We have to take the love that is within us and raise it to its basic potency, to its noblest beauty, to extend it to all its dimensions towards every manifestation of the soul that sustains the universe. And the reason that the soul that sustains the universe, its splendor is dimmed, it's very splendorous, only because of the deficiency of the person viewing it. We're living in the midst of this extraordinary It makes, you know, the most, it makes the Rolling Stones U2 collaborative multimedia show like nothing. Every single thing around us is okay. They do a very good job. All right, fine. They do it like, but we're actually living in the midst of this splendorous life, every breath. And he says we just have to open our eyes because it's the splendor that we're in is really here, and it's only our small seeing, so that we're not seeing it and experiencing it. Then he goes on. But this one's important. Love. We have to be loving beings. Love is the basic expression. Okay. I'm trying to get as practical as I can. I don't know if this address is somebody, but it's giving, you know, it's giving, you know, like it's oh, yeah, we got that right. But then he gets, but he also thinks it's all about consciousness with him. He doesn't, so he can't just, and here's look at consciousness. Look at the lights in their inwardness. Habet al ha'orot betochiyutam. We have to look at the lights of everything in their inwardness.
And that means?
Let not the names, the words, the idioms, and the letters confine your soul. That's his answer. Don't let the names, the words, the concepts, the ideas that this is that and that, don't let that control your soul, the externalities of things. I'm a this and I'm a that. That these things are meant to be under our control, not that we're under them. They're like a pharaoh. I have to be this way
he's
because I'm not this.
You're limited by language, but so don't.
But also your inner concept.
Right.
You,
yeah.
Don't what?
We can only understand what we can say, right? So he's basically saying, free your mind of your language and think beyond that. But that's why I said it's very complicated because it's not. It's very, very difficult. I don't even know where to start with that.
Well, it means, but on the pshat level, it means not to get caught in isms. That's in a way, the thing is, don't let the names of things, don't let the ideas behind things be ruling you. That's can be helpful.
Okay, so so is my statement incorrect? And what he's really saying
is... Your statement is correct. There's no such thing as incorrect statement.
Well, is he really saying don't be confined by social construct? Is that more the statement?
I think that's
also
a lot of it.
That's why he also diminished.
Yeah, you say, I'm a this. I'm a this type of chassid. I'm a this type of politician. I'm a this, I'm a that. And then we get locked into certain forms that are, like, they're not real.
Yeah.
That's not what,
that's
what real is.
That's more surface to what he said. You were talking in a deeper sense. What you said about language, that had more to do with direction, not the smaller part of language. Am I wrong about what your meaning was?
Well, he gives all these categories, right? He has actually names, letters, words, idioms.
That's the part.
But he's talking something untold, yeah. Different framing, yeah. I think. Yeah. That statement that you came out with, that you didn't know where to start, is different than
which is consistent with Maimonides' thought, which is we cannot say what God is, but only what God is not.
And also here, but also on a very on a pshat level, don't let the fact that I'm a Jew. And therefore, as a Jew, this is what it means, and these are his particular confines. I mean, we need certain confines, but he's saying, don't let those concepts of what you think of something should be by a certain external definition of what it is really prevent you from being who you are. Don't let... So that's pshat. And to recognize that, you know, the words and things, that we're meant to be the masters of the words, not to be that they master us. Slaves, Yetziat Mitzrayim. This is the metaphor on the internal, going out of our own limit, narrowness. And he's very much about, you know, he says that a lot. And then he goes on, and now he, it's both poetic, but it's actually, you know, it's encouraging. Ale lemala ale, rise to the heights, rise. Kikoach oz lecha, you have a mighty power. Yesh lecha kanfei ruach. You have wings of spirit. Each one of us has wings of spirit. Kanfei nesharim abirim. Wings of mighty eagles. Al tikachesh pam pen yikach shulra. Don't fail them. Don't deny them. Or else they'll deny you. Don't, like, then, okay, if you don't think they're there, they're not going to show, they're not going to be there, but you're not going to... Drashotam, seek for them, call for them. Ask for them. Even drash, you can even say stronger. But it's also seize, look for them. Ve'yimtza'u lecha miyad. And you'll find them immediately. Yeah, and that's always an encouraging image that to understand that that's because what I mean, yeah. If you say why we should learn Rav Kook, Torah until we came to Eretz Israel came mostly from the side of Torah Meira, the fear of God side. The return to Eretz Israel, which is also the return from Mashiach ben Yosef to Mashiach ben David, which we'll talk about the nationalism. We have to move it fast, actually. So a few more things. Is a transformation of the Torah that comes from a fear place to the Torah of love. And this is what a Torah of love looks like. And Rav Kook tried to apply that, and you see that applied in all sorts of ways. And it's a Torah of really honoring that we're each human being, each person who's in Israel, who's stirred by anything, that's our inner wings calling for us. And saying, fly with what you're being stirred to do. He says that in so many other places. That which you're being called on your deepest thing, that's God speaking to you. Right? Whenever the heart feels a truly spiritual stirring, whenever a new and noble idea is born, it's as if we're listening to the voice of an angel of God, asking that we open. We did this piece a few times, I think. It's one of my favorites. But that's what he's saying. That's where God is, not in the... And the ritual is all that to support all that, but if you're not operating on that internal connectivity and developing that internal connectivity, then... But so in the section we did this in the section in the Moral Principles on Love, though, he says, the whole Torah, the moral teachings, the commandments, the mitzvot, the good deeds and the studies have as their objective to remove the roadblocks so that universal love should be able to spread and to extend to all realms of life. Okay, so the mitzvot are our channel, but if we don't connect the true kavanah, what they're really about, we're like, it's empty, and it's so we have to be our wings, and then it's interesting in this piece it just continues, but these last two paragraphs Rav Kook wrote before he wrote the first line. The Nazir tacked these next two paragraphs at the end of it. And the way you can tell that's in the Hebrew, because the next one starts with a larger print. So just because the Nazir, we put them together. And that's the Nazir. It's his Yortzeit these days. That's why it's on the left of Cook's main Talmud. And so he puts this afterwards. And he says like this. Sure, we have to know the forms that robe reality are precious and they're holy. Everything. But... when we approach a life of enlightenment, we must not swerve from the perspective that light flows from the incomprehensible to the comprehensible by way of emanation from the light of the Ein Sof. So we have to know that everything in the physical world, and start training our eyes to see it in that way, that everything in the physical world is actually just the manifestation of the Ein Sof in physicality. And you know, that's what the Mekubalim were developing, is that relationship with the physical world. And understanding then that the physical world becomes our place to be godly, is what we do with it, and our will and where we direct it to, and so forth. So it becomes a tremendous play that we do together with creation. And the work is to do love and to do the fixing of Tov V'Ra. That's the basic thing. So he says like this. All right, and then he finally finishes with this, and this is what why the Nazir wanted to put this in the end. With all of this, you know, really seeing the light of the Shekhinah and everything, and seeing the wonders of creation, and knowing the stirring of our heart and everybody's heart, and developing our love, and seeing the things on the inside, and not being, you know, fooled by the outside, and honoring our wings. Anu kruim, we are called. Lichyot mit adnim ba'adanim shmeimim, to be Edenized in all the heavenly Edens. He translates it, we're summoned to share in this heavenly delight. But the word in Hebrew is mit aden. So to experience all the heavenly Edens, but where? Bekol prateya hakarot, in every particular area of recognition and experience, is an expression of the adanim shmeimim. And that's where we're living in. And so in all partei hakarot, right, in all the particularized perceptions, which are included in this universal whole from which all life has engendered. So that could be a bit of guidance to the spiritual work in that sense, that Ryan has to reflect on this. Because a lot of the thing about how to bring Rav Kook into consciousness, because now you're I'm thinking about it because of the questions, is it is a work of consciousness transformation. That's really a lot of what he's directed us to expand our consciousness into whatever we see in the world, to see it much more deeply and broadly than in the small way. In the cookbook, and you have this on page 2 there, but you have it above originality and acquired knowledge, but I'll read it. Whoever is endowed with the soul of a creator must create work of imagination and thought. We can't confine ourselves in shallow study. The flame of the soul is rising by itself. We are spirit, right? So the flame of the soul is rising, and we can't impede it on its course. Scope for thought. This is the constant claim that a thinking person addresses to themselves. Scope for thought.
Scope.
Room for thinking. Really being able to think freely and think that. Because that's where we experience that. Superficial study sometimes narrows thought, aborts it its birth. It's this that aggravates the sickness of narrowness of thought. With all one's strength, we must liberate ourselves from this in order to free the soul from its narrow confines, to redeem it from its Egypt, from the house of bondage. He takes the internal Egypt that we have to get rid of, is that internal thing which is keeping our freedom of thought and freedom of self-expression. That's our Pharaoh, and that we're each invited to get rid of. In terms of what he would say about Arabs.
Who?
Arabs. I think I probably read this at one point, but it's worth rereading. He, first of all, there was a editorial. There was a newspaper article that somebody wrote that said disparaging things about Arabs in the early 1920s, and Rav Kook took the effort of writing a letter to the editor and saying we're not allowed to talk this way, and we can't be, we have to be, human, civil, and so on. But in the larger picture, his vision, and this is the, he was the main opposition to the Mufti of Jerusalem. Okay, so he dealt with, when the Mufti did his craziness, Rav Kook was the person who was representing the Jewish community in complaining about it, in the investigations afterwards, and so on. And as well, he felt particularly involved because he brought the community to Hebron in 1925, that was then massacred in the massacres of 1929. Because he wanted, in 1922, he was summered in Hebron, and he writes a letter. It's so beautiful here, we should be buying here, we're buying everywhere, we should also come to Hebron in 1922. And then he suggested for that yeshiva to come there. So he was quite involved with all of that. But he writes then how nice it is in Hebron, and how sweet the people are, and we should go. But relationship to other religions. He takes the verse that if we look at the story, And I think you have this in the section on letters further down. If you see the top letters, you may have it in front of you, but I'll just read it for you right now. About other religions, the way for us to look for what the Torah's teaching is about other religions is from the historical moment in which Jacob, who calls, you know, the man of integrity, Ish Hayatam, Hayashar, or Ish Hatam, said on his reunion with Esav, I have seen you, it's like seeing the face of God. As everybody knows, that's in Genesis when they come together, right? The brotherly love, Rav Kook says, and then Rav Kook adds, he says now, that verse, when Jacob, after 22 years of exile and fear from his brother, they hug and says, Yirota kirot me Elokim. His words shall not go down as a vain utterance. The brotherly love of Esav and Jacob, of Yitzchak and Ishmael. And the allusion here is Judaism and Christianity, and Israel and Islam. The brotherly love of those empires will assert itself, that's at the root of those histories, will assert itself above all the confusion that the rasha'ut, I think is the word in Hebrew, that the evil, the negativity brought on by our, I don't like bodily nature, I prefer translating it by our materiality, but our, you know, warlike beings on everybody's part, has engendered. But the core is to understand, the Torah is teaching us that those people who historically have been our most greatest foes are in truth our brothers, and Ishmael could say half-brother, Esav, it's twin-brother. And he says that's what's finally going to come forth. The brotherly love is what's dominant, because that's the nature of love. And it's finally going to come forth, and it'll overcome all the negativity and the evil and transform them to eternal light and compassion. And then he says, direction to us. Deya rachava zot. If this broad thinking, this concept, sweetened by the sweet honey of the Torah of truth, which people explain as a reference to Kabbalah, that the Kabbalistic understanding has to come forth, and that's, if we do that, it'll also, the Kabbalah is where we get the teaching that the Torah is about love, and that the basic energy of the world is tov, unfolding, and where all of that is really emphasized, and so we need to really strengthen that.
So how does he explain the clear and difficult directive of how to deal with the Amalek?
Yeah, he has it here. He says, and it's in the section you have in the Lights of Holiness. First of all, let's finish this and then we'll go to that. But he says, this idea has to be our guide in all our ways in the end of days to complete our understanding of the Torah. Meaning, we have an incomplete understanding of the Torah. If we don't understand, it's about bringing us back to brotherly love. We're ending soon, if you're wondering how long it's going. It's good. We have to be out of here fairly soon after 9 o'clock. This concept has to be our guide in all our ways in the end. So we have to think that this is how it is, and now we have to apply that to how we're looking at things. In order to seal our understanding, it's an Aramaic phrase, mishtam, to give the chatima of the oraita, beheichal de malcha de mashiach. That is the Torah of the Mashiach. Is that one that brings us to understand that it's, and who else is all brothers and sisters? Every child of Adam and Eve. This idea extended one further in other places is explicit. We're at core, we're all the children of Adam and Eve, and that's what the Torah teaches. And he says this is the thing that has to accompany us in all our ways in the end of days. That's what we have to see how does its principle apply and put it into application. And many people are doing it. There's many wonderful nonprofits that are doing holy, holy work trying to, you know, break the model of enemies. And he says, when we do that, we'll be making the transformation marira lematika v'chashucha lenohora, from sweetness, from bitterness to sweetness, and darkness to illumination. But then in the other piece, which talks about Amalek, it's in the divine eye in the lights of holiness, the thinner section. You may find it if you turn it, but I'll just read. The divine eye. It's in there. You can, if somebody wants to follow along, the heading is divine eye. The problem is we didn't paginate these properly when they photocopied.
It's okay.
So it's but there's not that many pages there. So if you want to follow along, but this is an important one. And this is this is again from his diaries. It says, it's an art of great enlightenment to purge anger from the heart entirely. To look at everything with a benevolent eye, compassionate concern, without reservation. This is to emulate the eye of God that focuses only on the good. This should also include the works wrought done by the wicked, even those most thoroughly immersed in wickedness. It means we have to pity them for being sunk in the mire of wickedness, find their good aspect, and minimize the scope of their guilt. It involves stressing the positive side even of seducers to idolatry, whom we've been admonished not to pity and not to spare. This admonition, not to pity and not to spare, applies only to a legal trial that has to do with action. But on a theoretical side, there is much to contemplate, to discern the good intention that may be hidden even in the act of seduction. So he's saying that's where we have to put our eyes to find the good. And of course, that's what he was able to recognize in everybody in Israel there. The chilonim, the non-religious, the pork eaters. He was able to see what extraordinary good was in them and show them that he saw that. And so all of that stuff transformed. And so he says, when we're able to do that, but here is where he said, I thought it was here he spoke about Amalek, I guess it was. But it says, when we reflect on the Agadah, that the descendants of Sisera taught Torah, the descendants of Haman taught Torah, we reach the depth of compassion, calls on us not to be caught up in the stream of hatred, even of our fiercest enemies. So there was another, I thought it was here.
There was another reference before, descendants of Haman.
It's a Gemara in Gittin, where it says, it's a Midrash in Gittin, page 37b, the descendants of Sisera, who was the Canaanite general, and the descendants of Sisera became Torah teachers in Yerushalayim, the descendants of Haman taught Torah in Bnei Brak. He says, when we understand that, that's what is it telling us? We have to reach a depth of compassion, not to be caught up in a stream of hatred, even of our fiercest enemies. We had another one where he mentions Amalek specifically.
Amalek has something to do with this. I don't know why the Holocaust survivors would be so eager right now. And Haman's a little bit further away. Haman's a little bit further away. Time might have something to do with forgiveness as well.
You know, you're out. It's not easy.
Sure. It's impossible for people I know.
Yeah.
By saying that only recently have they advertised in Germany, 50,000 euros in order to
for information leading.
Love our brother, which can be the hour of the Christian.
Well, the whole idea is to have the people who are surviving us, and maybe the second generation.
What she's saying to us that you have all this impossible journey because you've got to take yourself out of the situation you're in.
That their battle is totally lost at all of them, because the certain generation after
achieve anything.
What are you saying? Everybody can broaden their.
It may not be that.
He's not saying it's not that far away. I don't think. I think he's saying making it.
If you look at the situation today,
I'm not actually conscious of time at this point because we have 15 minutes, and it's important for Shirley downstairs. That she needs to get her bus. We need to go up here. But everybody is invited to go for coffee and spend a few minutes. It would be great.
We can do a lot in 15 minutes.
The thing is that, but I actually wanted to hear from people. I asked if somebody said you had a line, something in his writings that touched you. If anybody else has anything else to share within that sharing, because I didn't want to ignore that and forget about that.
Yeah, no, I asked just questions.
Ah.
Like, there was something now I've been turning it back and forth and trying to find it. But when he talks about the destroyers,
souls of chaos?
The holiness that destroys the holiness. Yeah, I like that.
Can you find it?
What are you thinking? I was thinking that.
Anybody else? You have something close by? Or anything? What do you like about Rav Kook?
I mean, so I shared that thing about, having love for all the nations and people. But something that I just keep thinking about is, as people are sharing, frustrations, I guess, and I feel it also, being overwhelmed by his very intense language. I just keep thinking of how you keep talking about him, how he's such a Talmud Chacham and he knows all this Torah, and then he comes to this point. And in the first class, how you touched on just a little bit of Kabbalah that would give us reference to this term Knesset Yisrael. How even though there's been moments in what he writes that I feel simply I can connect to, I just keep coming back to the fact that potentially I'm missing some of the essence of what he's saying because I don't have a comprehensive knowledge of Kabbalah, let alone all of Torah, but it seems that keeps coming up. I keep thinking of that.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean that the moments of connection that I've had weren't worthwhile, but when I think about whoa, there's an element of the fact that even though I may be familiar with the stories that he's bringing from Tanakh, I don't really understand the other level.
But I think part of his gift, and this is what certain sages and scholars say about him, part of his gift is, and he was conscious of that, he didn't expect it, and he didn't need it, and we don't need it. He actually puts it into a language that is trying to put all those things in a language that anyone who just reads it can understand So that's part of his gift, actually, is to say, yeah, of course, but this is what the Kabbalah's punchline is. Because I told you the story of the Lubavitcher Rebbe who asked the Rav Nazir why Rav Kook wrote in the style he did, and he went, Shai Yashu Kohn went to Jerusalem to ask his father. The Lubavitcher Rebbe wants to know why Rav Kook wrote the way he did rather than Kabbalese or Hasidic or Rabbinic. And he went back, and he came back a year later. He wanted people to understand it. So he was trying to speak in a level that anybody could understand. But
he also says somewhere that he says not everyone should study Kabbalah or understand it. Because he says then it becomes very shallow.
Yeah. All right, but lots of people should. Did you find the one you wanted? Which one? So the one you shared.
There's a holiness that builds and there's a holiness that destroys. The benefits of the holiness that builds are visible, while the benefits of the one that destroys are hidden, because it destroys in order to build what is nobler than what has been built already. And it just reminded me that we get so upset with destruction. Someone even today said, so if Israel doesn't exist, that just means that it wasn't the right way at this time. Everybody is... She was saying that we've taken the Medina and put it up as a golden calf, which is sort of has something to do with the whole settler issue too. And that, I thought that was related to that whole thing and that made me think a little differently about it.
Will you read that line again?
I think it goes on to me, but that was
No, just what you said before.
The benefits of the holiness that builds are visible, while the benefits of the one that destroys are hidden, because it destroys in order to build what is nobler than what has been born, what has been built already. If you don't see that as it's being destroyed, you don't see that as a rigor.
The
So he goes on, the third paragraph, there is also guidance in a certain way. He gives the example of that is Moses, who broke the tablets. So we say all the negativity that happens in the world is because the world is reaching higher. Things break down in order to have higher construction. That's the general principle. And then he gives in the third paragraph, someone whose spirit can't reach out to this, then they can't tolerate spiritual destruction, but they don't have edifices of their own, and they find shelter in naturally formed structures, like you find structures in organizations and groups, like rabbits who find shelter in the rocks. But then he gives the direction. But a human being, someone who has a human soul, their soul will be unable to rest themselves except in edifices that we construct with our own spiritual toil. And so we need, that's again, well, I guess the saying, we have to understand that let's just keep going. At times, the vision... Oh, is that all you got there? In that page? All right, so we won't bother.
That happened quite a bit. When,
well, because I was trying to emphasize probably
in a way
the one...
I would have liked to have bought the book.
Yeah, that would have been very good, actually.
No, it keeps going.
Because it was an Israeli who was doing this thing. Oh, right, how sweet.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
All right.
It's beautiful.
Oh, airplane. So I'll send you the email. And we'll
perfect.
All right, thank you so much.
Forgive me.
Yeah, so
I'm so sorry.
Bye-bye.
Good.
Have a good flight.
It's just that we have I'm conscious 7 minutes. The question is, what can we possibly read that would summarize it all? And we can't.
Was there a specific point that when you saw light, was it a specific verse or was it the book in general?
It was just the sense of spaciousness that suddenly is, and the encouragement to one's own. Right to the like this is the like the one these are the ones that I return to. Let each of us express in truth and in faithfulness whatever our soul reveals to us. Let us bring forth our spiritual creativity from potentiality to actuality without any deception. Out of such sparks, torches of light will be assembled. And they'll illuminate the whole world out of their glory. Out of each of our fragment of the inner truth will the great truth emerge. You know, it's funny. So I have to conclude. If one is going to say, how does one, you know, it's not a conclusion that, but in terms of just the discussion of how does one ground Rav Kook, it is in a way difficulty because his ultimate punchline is people need to do their inner spiritual work. You need to really take your spirit and your inner spirit seriously and really grow it and feed it and grow it and devote time to it and broaden your understanding and so it's not about anything so much on the outside, but it's really a working on one's consciousness, one's everything to expand one's consciousness in order to make one's actions more to the whole and more loving and more connected to the all. So it's very much, he's very much a guide to the inner process of transformation and change. And that's really the thing.
More, for me, now, I'm beginning to see that Rav Kook represents a thinking that is way beyond the acceptance of people even today. In other words, what he's saying is if we want to be unified, if we want to be together, if we want to be understanding, we have to drop all the labels to which we attach our life, whether it's religious or political or dogmatic. Because unless we do that, we will not achieve peace in our time.
I
that, I think, is his message to the world.
Say it right.
So with your permission, let me just, because I realized I wanted to also say something from the Nazir on this, and this is your text very soon. He has one piece where he actually gives, these are things to do, and it connects. It's about Ruach HaKodesh, it's from his notebooks. And he says, we have to understand, because he also says the punchline with Rav Kook is about that each person can be can have prophetic connection. It's Nivuah and Ruach HaKodesh. That's what we're developing here. So in that sense, you know, that's what it is. And he says, Nivuah and Ruach HaKodesh are the source of the wisdom of Israel on the inside, and its purpose forever and also today is Im Bekolo Tishma'u. That's the verse. If you hear God's call, that's what the Torah is calling us, to hear God's call. And he says, this is the call of the spirit of prophecy in its holy stillness. This covenant is established with Israel and his children. And what is the way? Quietening, sheket rash lagea briyot. Quietening the noise of mass thinking. Erasure, mechiyat hatziyurim batzurot. Erasure of the forms and the formations, concepts that are seen on the internal eyes and through our eyes. Our like we try to picture things. That through hitbodedut in a holy place, zimrat kodesh, mishirat tehilot, singing holy songs from God's praises, expanding one's consciousness through reading the great philosophy of the world, hitpashtut adat, begadlut emochin, through the process of philosophy and thinking, and working hard for Talmud Torah and Lemaise and in action in all its ways, without cutting off the Torah. It's really doing all the sides of the Torah. And then he says, and especially those things between man and man, and man and God in our Chaviro, and then he says, the punchline, La'asot Tov V'Chesed, that the focus is on doing Tov V'Chesed, then he quotes in bracket, Belizot Hinchat Soleah. If you don't do Tov and Chesed, that's not what your actions are all about, you're limping.